Joshua chapter 13. Joshua chapter 13. Noticed in the news this morning that former representative and presidential candidate and vice presidential candidate Jack Kemp passed away. I believe it was yesterday. He had been fighting a battle with cancer. Also, if you've been watching the news the last several weeks, then you've seen the discussions or heard many discussions about the swine flu outbreak that is taking place across the country and also in other places around the world. And there have been discussions, as some would say that it's overblown and that it's getting better, and others would disagree and say to be careful. I'm not here to discuss that one way or another, but I just mentioned those things this morning because they are reminders, I think, to us of the fact that there are certain things, if left in the human body, become very dangerous and can even become deadly. As we think about things that can make us ill, as we think of things that could destroy the life in a human body, I want us to think about a nation. I want us to focus on Joshua as we look at the events of chapters 13 through 19. Now remember, last time we were together when we were looking at Joshua 13 through 19, we focused on our inheritance. Remember last Sunday we talked about finding our inheritance and how each of the tribes were given a section of land and it was their responsibility to take possession of their section of land. And we talk about the need for us as Christians to find a section of land, if you will, an area of ministry, an area where we can serve in the kingdom of God and seek to make a difference in His name. Now what I want us to focus on for a few moments this morning is what Israel did about that. And as we look at Joshua chapters 13 through 19, I think we see what happens to a nation when they leave some dangerous things behind in their midst. Just as cancer can be dangerous when left in a human body, so we're going to find that for the nation of Israel, there were some things that became dangerous to them because they had some unfinished business. So we think about this unfinished business. I want to use the letter P as our memory glue today as we think about some points to ponder. And what I want us to do is I want us to ponder the promise, the problems, and the point. The promise, or promises, plural, the problems, and the point. So again, if you've got your Bibles, you've not done so, turn to Joshua chapter 13. I want us to begin this morning by thinking about the promise, what God had promised them. We looked at this last Sunday morning, but let's remind ourselves of what God said He would do. If you look in verse 6, God says to Joshua, about the middle of the verse, I will drive them out. I'm in Joshua 13. He says, I will drive them out before the sons of Israel. Only allot it to Israel for an inheritance as I have commanded you. Remember, what has happened is they have taken possession of the key strategic areas and cities in the land of Canaan. Now it's time to go and continue their expansion in the land, but there are still some pockets of resistance. And so now what they are to do is they are to finish conquering these smaller pockets of resistance. But instead of doing it as a whole, they're now going to do it by tribe. So you assign this tribe a section of the land, and you say to that tribe, okay, you capture any cities that we've not already taken in your plot of land. To this tribe, you take any cities that are in your plot of land that have not already been taken. And what God says is, I will give them victory. You just give them the land and give them the responsibility, and I will give them the victory over their enemies. Nobody will be able to stand before them. I'd like to jump forward several chapters to near the end of the book and look in Joshua chapter 23. Because then in Joshua chapter 23, we have some continued references to the promises of God. I want you to notice again what God says to the people. Here Joshua is speaking. In verse 5, it says, "The Lord your God, He will thrust them out from before you and drive them from before you, and you will possess their land just as the Lord your God promised you." Those two passages are just a couple of reminders of the fact that they were guaranteed of success. All they had to do was trust and obey, and they would have success. God promised it. But I also want us to realize that God's promise was contingent. It was contingent on their trusting and obeying. Let's continue to look in Joshua chapter 23. In verse 6 of Joshua 23, it says, "Be very firm then to keep and do all that is written in the law of Moses, so that you may not turn aside from it to the right or to the left, so that you will not associate with these nations, these which remain among you, or mention the name of their gods, or make anyone swear by them, or serve them, or bow down to them, but you are to cling to the Lord your God as you have done this day." In other words, God says, "I will give you victory, but I need you to do something. I need you to cling to my commandments, walk in my ways, and I need you to make sure that you don't associate with these nations because they are pagan, idol-worshipping nations. And if you have close associations with them, they're going to lead you to follow their false gods." I then want you to know what he says when you, if you go on down reading in Joshua chapter 23. For example, in verse 12, it says, "For if you ever go back and cling to the rest of these nations, these which remain among you, and intermarry with them so that you associate with them and they with you, know with certainty that the Lord your God will not continue to drive out these nations from before you, but they will be a snare and a trap to you, and a whip on your sides and thorns in your eyes until you perish from off this good land which the Lord your God is giving you." In other words, he says, "I will give you victory, but you need to walk in my ways." But he says, if you do not walk in my ways, if you choose, instead of having a relationship with me, if you choose to have a relationship with these nations who do not honor me, God says, "I will no longer, not only will I no longer not give you victory over these nations, but I will eventually drive you out of the land just like I am driving them out of the land to make room for you." And it's interesting, if you look at just the book of Joshua, we can see some examples of this becoming a reality. For example, if you go to Joshua chapters 14 and 15, and remember we looked at Caleb's allotment. And remember when Caleb requested his plot of land, which would end up being the city of Hebron, because God, through Moses, had promised it to him when he came in as one of the 12 spies. He said, "The land that you walked on will become yours." And so what happens in Joshua 14 is that the people of Judah and Caleb come to Joshua, and Caleb says to Joshua, "I want the land that Moses promised to me by the will of God." And he makes the statement, he says, "If God is with me, then I will go in and take it." Even though the Anakim live there, these powerful giant people that struck fear in the hearts of Israel some 40 years before and were part of the reason the Israelites didn't think they could go in and take the land in the first place. Remember when we looked at Caleb, Caleb says, "With God's help, we can defeat these people." And if you go into chapter 15, it says he did exactly what he said he would do. When they gave him the land of Hebron to be his city and his land, he went in and took it, and he defeated the Anakim because he trusted in the power of God. And so in Caleb, you have an example of somebody who takes God at His word. God said, "I'll give you the victory, I'll give you the land, you just be willing to go fight." That's what Caleb did, and he received the victory. But then you could jump back a few chapters earlier, back to Joshua chapter 7. Remember, the children of Israel had just defeated Jericho, and they're now going to fight this smaller city of Ai with about 12,000 people in it. They were so confident that they could win the victory that they only sent in 3,000 soldiers to defeat the city. They were just confident, "We took this big city of Jericho, so we're not going to have any problem with this smaller city of Ai." But they ended up being defeated in the first day of battle, running from the battlefield, and 36 of them died. And later we find out that really there were two major problems. One was they didn't consult God prior to the battle on how to approach the enemy. And the other problem was there was sin in the camp. Remember, Achan had taken some things from Jericho that were supposed to be devoted to God. In essence, he had stolen from God. And because he had stolen from God and his family and the people had done nothing about it, they suffered defeat. And so I think as you look at what happened at Ai and you see what happened with Caleb and his inheritance, you have examples of the promise as laid out in Joshua 13 and Joshua 23. God says, I'll give you the victory, but you must walk in my ways, you must trust and obey. And I think if you look at the history of Israel, and you look at times when Israel had problems, they had problems when they didn't trust and obey. In other words, they failed to be successful when they failed to either trust or obey, or trust and obey. So I want us to see the promise, but I also want us to see the reason they had problems in the past and the reason they would have problems in this case. I want us to look at a few passages scattered between chapter 13 and chapter 17. Remember, you've got in this section the allotment of territories, and they're listing what this tribe got and this tribe got. And in the process of that, they are saying which cities belong to this tribe, etc. But I want you to notice some things that are mixed in there. For example, in Joshua chapter 13 and verse 13, it says, "But the sons of Israel did not dispossess the Geshurites and the Maacathites." It's easy for me to say. "For Geshur and Maacath live among Israel to this day." If we move forward to chapter 15, if we look in Joshua chapter 15 and verse 63, it says, "Now as for the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the sons of Judah could not drive them out. So the Jebusites live with the sons of Judah in Jerusalem until this day." Then look in chapter 16 and verse 10. "But they did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer. So the Canaanites lived in the midst of Ephraim to this day, and they became forced laborers." Then look in chapter 17 and verse 12. "But the sons of Manasseh could not take possession of these cities because the Canaanites persisted in living in that land." Did you know what was there? Did you notice what was there, you know, in the middle of all that? These are verses that we might have just skimmed over. In fact, most folks, when they read Joshua, they don't really pay a lot of detail to chapters 15 through 19 because it's just a list of a bunch of cities. Okay? And so it's not the most exciting reading. But there's some important stuff in there in the midst of all those lists of cities. And as you look at what he's saying here, he says as he goes from tribe to tribe, these tribes had unfinished business. Do you remember we looked at a map, I believe it was last week, and on that map we had a coloration of the map that showed parts of the empire that had been taken and parts that needed to be taken. And as you look at the map here, you see the darker section in the middle? That's what the children of Israel had control of as of Joshua chapter 12. And the lighter regions on the outside represented what they didn't have control of yet. And so remember, what is happening in Joshua 13 through 19 is they're getting their allotments, and part of what they're supposed to do in getting their section of land is they're supposed to capture the regions that are lighter colored on this map that have not been captured yet. And so what we find when we look at these four examples from Joshua 13 through 17 is we're finding that there are parts of the land that were promised to Israel and were allotted to the tribes that they did not get control of. They didn't take possession. Was the problem with God, or was the problem with Israel? And it's interesting that when you then take this and you combine it with Judges chapter 1, and as you look at this particular map, you can see hopefully over on the right a listing of the tribes. Remember, we looked at this last week. And we talked about the order in which the tribes got their areas of inheritance. What I try to do on this one is when you take Joshua 13 through 17, and you take Judges chapter 1, you begin to find the tribes that had unfinished business. Can you see a little asterisk by some of the names that are up here? If they've got an asterisk by their name, that means that in the book of Judges, they are listed in chapter 1 as a tribe that had areas within their inheritance where they did not take possession of it. You may see by Manasseh on the eastern side a couple of asterisks. That means that we get that information from the book of Joshua, Joshua chapter 13, verse 13. You may also notice that Simeon here has a couple of asterisks by his name. He's not specifically mentioned as not taking possession of a region, but when you look at Judges chapter 1, you'll find that when Judah went to take possession of their territory, they asked Simeon to go with them and help them to do it. And so Judah's failure to take possession of land would have involved Simeon. In other words, I just want you to look at all of those tribes that are on the screen that had unfinished business. These are tribes that were promised that they could have a section of land. All they had to do was take it. Now, if they didn't get something, do you think it was God's weakness or theirs? I want you to think about what we said in our first point about the promises of God. And I want you to think about the history of Israel. When was it that Israel failed? It was when they did not trust, and it was when they did not obey. And so as I look what happened in Joshua chapters 13 through 19, I find a people who didn't get all they could have had because they did not trust and they did not obey. Now, what is the point for us? What can we gather from what they did? Their unfinished business, these cities that they left in their midst, these peoples who worshiped false gods that they left among them in violation to God's will. I think, first of all, we need to think about our own selves and our own lives and what we are allowing to happen in our own families. I want us to think about, do we fail at times because we do not trust and obey? Just as an example, if you were to look in the book of James, in James chapter 1, and then later in James chapter 4, he's going to talk about prayer. And what he basically says in chapter 1, he says, if you ask God for wisdom, don't pray doubting. Trust that God will answer the prayer. If you don't believe, that God can answer the prayer, then don't pray and don't expect anything. He then later is going to talk about prayer, and he's going to say, first of all, you don't have because you don't ask. And then he says, when you ask, you don't receive because you ask improperly. You ask out of selfish motives. And in consistency with those selfish motives, you're living wrong lifestyles. You bicker and you fight and you tear each other apart. He even talks about murder at the beginning of the chapter. In other words, he basically says, your prayers are failing because either you don't try or you don't trust or you don't obey or there's a combination thereof. And maybe that's just one example of an area in our life where we're failing because we don't trust and obey. The second thing I want us to think about is, do we have unfinished business? What sin cities, if you will, do we have still standing in our lives? Remember, the reason God wanted the people in the land of Canaan rooted out of the land was because that they were evil people who worshiped false gods and rejected the one true God. And He did not want them influencing His people. And so He wanted them clear out of the land so the land would be purified again and so the children of Israel could remain pure. Well, what about us? I want you to think about places like 1 Corinthians chapter 6. The city of Corinth would definitely qualify as a sin city. Most of the sins that you could find in the ancient world could be found in the city of Corinth. And you had people becoming Christians out of this background. And so Paul goes to these folks who were Christians, who came out of this background, but who were going back to some of the things they did in their old lifestyle. And he reminds them, he says, do you not remember that you are a temple of the Spirit of God? If your body is a temple of God's Spirit, then why are you joining it to a prostitute? Why are you doing immoral things? And what he's saying to them is, basically, you need to get the sin cities out of your life. Out of your lives. You became Christians. You've given your lives to God, but you've allowed some things from your old lifestyle to remain. And see, what Israel did is they took possession of the land, but they left some sin cities in the land, and those sin cities would plague them for hundreds of years. What sin city is in our lives? What is it that we have allowed to stay from our life before Christ that is destroying us, it's destroying our marriages, and it's destroying our families? What cities do we need to tear down? What sin cities have we allowed to remain that we need to finally root out by the power and grace of God? And the third and last thing I want us to think about is I want us to think about what kind of influences have we left behind for our children. Israel left pagan cities that their children would have to deal with. You know, a lot of the discussions about what's going on in the economy and decisions that are being made in Washington, a lot of those discussions talk about the fact that the decisions we make now, our children will pay for. That doesn't just apply when you talk about the economy. It applies when we talk about spirituality. It's interesting then, you read Judges chapter 1 and it describes all of these cities that were left behind, just like Joshua does. And then basically the rest of the book of Judges describes the misery and warfare that Israel would be involved in for hundreds of years, all because these cities were left behind. In other words, the parents didn't do their job. They left bad influences in the country, and their kids would pay for it, and their grandchildren and their grandchildren for hundreds of years. I'm reminded of 1 Corinthians where it tells us in chapter 15 that evil communications or evil companions corrupt good morals, corrupt goodness. I want us to think about, parents, what influences are we leaving behind in the lives of our children? You know, I noticed this morning they were interviewing the parents of the little girl from England. Remember, she was just shy of her fourth birthday and her family was on vacation in Portugal. And they decided to go out to dinner one night and they left little Madeline, who was 3 years old, just shy of four, left her in the room by herself. Remember? And she went missing. And now we're some 3 years later and their parents are still searching for her. And most of us are thinking, how in the world can you leave a three-year-old child alone in a room? But as we think about that, and before we start pointing a finger, I want us to think about what are we leaving our children alone with? What about the televisions we leave our kids alone with? What about the movie theaters we leave our kids alone in? What about the music we leave our kids alone to listen to? What about the social networking sites we leave our kids alone to participate in? And we don't pay any attention to what's in the movies. We don't pay any attention to what's on the television shows. We don't pay any attention to what's on the websites they go to. We don't pay any attention to what they're exposing themselves to. And we've got different reasons for that. Sometimes we're just too busy, or at least think we're too busy. Sometimes we think, oh, well, I don't want to butt into their privacy. We think, oh, I want to be their buddy and their friend. I think we miss the point. I love my girls, and I hope they like me. But God didn't put me on this planet to be their best friend. God put me on this planet to help shape them into the image of Jesus Christ. That's my mission. And if at the end of my life they hate my guts, but they are shaped into the image of Christ, I'm good with that. I don't think those two go together. But my point is, I'm not out to be their friend, but I hope we can be friends even as I help them to be like Christ. I think my job, I need to know what kind of music they listen to. I need to know what they're watching. Does that mean I'm over their shoulder every time they do something? No, but it means I need to know. I need to help them make wise, discerning choices. And I think far too many times we've left pagan cities in our homes. And we've done nothing to know what's going on. And we've left some Jerusalems. And we've left some Geshurites. And we've left some Maacathites. And they're destroying our kids. And then we blame our kids and say, why don't y'all act better?
And they could be just like the children of Joshua's generation. And they can turn to us and say, why didn't you clear out the cities? You're the ones who left them in our lives. Would you take out the songbooks before you and turn to the hymn of encouragement? It was interesting, on one of the major network sites, they had a listing of 10 things that you could do to help avoid getting the swine flu or passing it on to somebody else. I found basically if you boiled all the 10 things down, it came to this. Be careful what you expose yourself and others to, and wash your hands. Okay? So if you just wash your hands as much as possible, you wash away the filth and the germs, and you're careful what you expose to others. You know, they talked about coughing into your elbow. If you're sick, don't go to work and school. If you're around somebody that's coughing or sneezing, avoid them and stay away from those in public places, etc. Then basically you can avoid, and I don't mean to offend anybody that's coughed this morning, but those are some things that you can do. It seems to me the same thing applies in spiritual areas. Do we have some unfinished business in our personal lives and our family lives? You know how you do something about it? First of all, we're very careful about what we expose ourselves to when it comes to friends, media, etc. But it also means cleansing ourselves. And the only way we can cleanse ourselves is with Jesus Christ. It means if I'm not a child of God, that if I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, He died for my sins and God raised Him from the dead, then based on that faith, I will be baptized into Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of my sins, admitting that I'm a sinner and confessing my faith before others, and I am clean. The sin is washed away. It means that if I'm a child of God and I look at my life and I say, I've still got some sin cities there, it means that in addition to avoiding the exposure which will allow them to stay, it means also that I can go back to God and say, Father, will You forgive me? Will You wipe this sin city from Your memory? And will You help me to keep it out of my life? That's what we have an opportunity to do in this invitation. If we can help you to remove and finish some unfinished business, please come. And I just want to say one more thing. A lot of congregations have started a habit that I think is great. And that habit is no one responds alone. It is a scary thing to walk down in front of 700 people and say, I've got unfinished business. But it's not so scary if somebody will walk with me. So I just want to ask you, from here on, whether it's this morning or 10 years from now, don't ever, ever let anybody respond alone. If you see somebody walk down the aisle from your section, it doesn't matter if you know them or not. You come with them. Don't make them sit down on this front row by themselves. You see, there not only needs to be a willingness to change, there needs to be a support system that says, I've got your back, and I will stand by you as you make that change. Someday, I'm going to need you to get my back to. So come and let's work together to take care of unfinished business. Won't you come as we stand and sing?